Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Once again, ahlan wa sahlan wa marhaban bikum wa marhaban wa marhaban bikum to this edition of Truthful Connection, coming to you exclusively from the studios of Markaz Sahaba Online, live and exclusively from the studios of Markaz Sahaba Online in Durban, South Africa. Inshallah, we now get into our segment called Parliament Talk with our respected brother, Manzoor Ahmad Imam, who is a member of Parliament. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, brother Manzoor Muhammad Ahmad Imam.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh from a very beautiful, mashallah, city of Durban. And I can assure you, many, many of the beachgoers are already there enjoying a beautiful swim, even though to a very large extent the water may be contaminated. And you can see clearly from here that the water is not absolutely clean. But nevertheless, beachgoers are enjoying that early morning swim.
Alhamdulillah. So that means you are sitting at the beach at the moment.
Not at all. Not at all. I live across the road from the beach, so you have a view of the ocean. And of course, that's the daily occurrence. But this morning, unusually, a very large number of people on the beach. I must be honest with you, a very, very large number, stretching, you can see, kilometers. I'm not sure, perhaps because I think there's one or two rallies that are taking place in KwaZulu-Natal, in Durban, manifesto launches, and I think that's what's giving rise to the large number of those that perhaps come from rural areas and never had the opportunity of enjoying the ocean.
Okay, this week, alhamdulillah, there wasn't so much of drama in Parliament, but one of the, you know, issues that have become a talking point is the claim that the IEC unlawfully registered MK as a political party, and this is a claim that is being made by the ANC. Now, the ANC, of course, has taken the IEC to court regarding this, you know, to prevent the registration of MK. Now, the whole question is, does the ANC have any case, considering that they themselves disbanded the ANC, MK?
Well, I think the first point to note here is just that MK has always been part of the ANC. Yes, you're absolutely correct. They were disbanded. Very importantly, MK has not been registered as any entity whatsoever, whether as a political party or a company or whatever it is, or a NGO. And so they've never been registered. So the name cannot be exclusively claimed by the ANC. However, I'm told there is case studies where an organization that is aligned to a particular name and structure, even though has not had a separate registration process, may claim those rights if it's going to infringe on their rights, particularly in this case, which might impact on the voters and the confusion that it may cause. However, now, in order to register as a political party, there are processes that you have to follow. And for MK to have been registered as a political party, they ought to have followed those processes. That process includes, but not limited to, it being advertised for about 10 days or 14 days for objections to the name that's being used before it is gazetted and things. All those processes are completed. So in my view, the ANC may have been fast asleep. Like most parties, you know, they don't really follow this gazette and things of that nature. But when you are an organization of that nature and with the resources that you have, particularly, you should have mechanisms or measures in place to keep abreast of the, you know, the development that's taking place on a daily basis. So I think the ANC have been found wanting. The IEC correctly would have done what they had to do, and the ANC did not pick this up. The party was registered, and now the ANC is crying foul. And I think they will have a difficult case, particularly because the processes would have been followed before they registered it. That's the IEC. So I'm not certain that the ANC has a case as far as this is concerned, other than the aspect of MK being linked and or aligned to them. However, you made a very important point earlier on, my brother. The ANC had also disbanded the structure. So surely if you disbanded somebody or you fired somebody, or you expel somebody, they can go and, you know, form their own organization like people do as far as political parties and things are concerned. So I think, in my view, the ANC has a very weak case. At the same time, you know, in our courts of law today, anything and everything is expected. You can see some of the judgments that are coming, how controversial they are. Anything can happen. But I want to warn against what is happening. If or should the MK not be allowed to contest as a result of that, there'll be a war in KZN. There'll be a bloodbath, I can tell you now. The MK, from my understanding, with latest reports from analysts and research and surveys that have been done, is gaining momentum. You've seen the list. The list is being headed by Jacob's former president, Jacob Zuma. Now, there is going to be a battle. You had Blood River before. Now you're going to have to talk about Tugela River. So, yes, I can tell you it's very frightening what KwaZulu-Natal can turn out to be. But remember, the issue and problem is bigger than that. Number one, will they be allowed to contest? Currently, if you look at the, they have registered, they have participated, they have complied with the requirements to participate in this election. That's the first thing that has been made very clear. Now, whether they'll be allowed to continue depends on the outcome of that case. But let's assume that case does not, I mean, MK is not allowed to contest. You think they're going to sit back and allow it? No. Let's assume they do contest and the votes are split. Do you think the ANC is going to sit back and watch? No. So there's a whole lot of dynamics that one has to be very concerned about in KwaZulu-Natal particularly. But remember, MK is not making strides just in KwaZulu-Natal, but in other provinces as well.
This case, somehow or the other, seems to be similar to the case that they had against Scope, because that Congress of the People, they also claimed, you know, was something that belonged to them, that name.
Yeah. Yeah, they've tried that as well, and that failed. I think the ANC, in my view, is wasting resources. Perhaps, you know, I go back to what I've always said. If it's not your money, we don't mind wasting it. It's taxpayers' money that is being wasted in the country. So, you know, people don't care. Unless you know, that's money coming out of your pocket, nobody cares. End of the day, I think the IEC is, they are not perfect. I can tell you the IEC is very controversial. There's no doubt about it. They are weak in many aspects. But in this case, I think they have done what they had to do. It was the ANC that was fast asleep. And I think they are wasting their time. Right now, I give you a good example. Even on the new parties and things, the matter is still before the court. Still before the court, but the elections is already going ahead, proclaimed and going ahead. And, you know, as far as signatures for smaller parties and all those things, the matters have not been finalized. Now, if it has not been finalized, on what basis do you continue? You need to bring finality if you want to level the playing field. Exactly the same thing here. The matter is before the court. The MK is registered as a party. MK is already on the list to contest. The ANC is taking them to court. The election date is set. People need to campaign and do what they have to do. So what does it tell you about the judiciary? Are these matters not matters that should be dealt with urgently? you know, with urgency it deserves, so that you can resolve these matters, so you can have a free, fair, transparent and credible election. Now, when you have an election of this nature and there's so many questions unanswered and you haven't ensured that everybody has an equal opportunity, it makes it very difficult. And bigger parties, it seems like, you know, want to dominate and control the political arena. This is the other problem that you have. So when they believe that you're infringing on them or it'll affect the impact or the outcome, then this is what they do. Court, court, court. Court seems to be running the country at this point in time, if you've noticed it. They seem to be the ones that are deciding what should and what should not happen.
Now, another issue that came up this week is related to the Labor Relations Act, LRA, and the employment equity. Now, the Labor and Employment Minister has announced a new annual earnings threshold under the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, which will have implications for South African employees. In a gazette published on Monday, the 20th of February, that is this year, he announced that the new earning threshold will be 241,110.59 per annum, approximately 20,100 rand per month from the 1st of March 2023. Previously, the earning threshold was 224,080.48 per annum, approximately 18,673 rand per month. Earnings referred to in the Gazette is defined as the regular annual remuneration before deductions, that is income tax, pension, medical aid and similar payments, but excluding similar payments, contributions made by the employer in respect of the employee. Now, first thing, regarding the questions, for the benefit of the layman, Can we define the term earning threshold?
Okay. First of all, Jazakallah for that. Okay. Now, it's actually increased from 241,000 to 254,000. Okay. There's a 13,261 annual increase. Now, the difference between the two is actually an earning threshold is the maximum amount of earnings. And when we talk about earnings, remember, it's just your salary. Your basic salary minus your it's just your basic salary that excludes certain benefits but includes certain things like taxes and medical aid and that kind of thing. Now, what this is all about is that as an employee, you have a certain level of protection. Now, in terms of those that are above the threshold, you have very limited protection, which means that you will have to access the labor court and things if there are disputes between employer and employee, if you want to negotiate issues as far as working hours, holiday period, night shift, all those things, you're going to need to negotiate with your employers on. If you're below the earning threshold, you have the protection, you can go to CCMA. So those below that threshold have the added protection by the Department of Labor, while those above do not have that. The others go to the Labor Court, the one below go to the CCMA. CCMA, it costs you nothing, Labor Court costs you money. You know, so these are basically one of the reasons. Like, you know, if you want to talk about issues of overtime, the number of working hours per week, your meal intervals, Sunday work, all that has protection under the, if you are less than the threshold. But if you are exceeding the threshold, then you do not have that protection. However, you can negotiate that. But remember, the employer is not compelled to comply with anything of those. That is based on the negotiated settlement you have. On the contrary, if you are below the threshold, this is governed by the Act, and you've got the protection as far as the hours of work, overtime, you know, whether you want a shorter working week, your meal intervals, what happens on a Sunday, what happens on a night shift, whether you get transport, all these issues are what. So basically, the difference is below the threshold, you have the protection of the Department of Labor, right? Above that, limited. It means that you're more on your own, and it's up to you to negotiate with your employer. Of course, on both aspects, even if it's unreasonable, you know, there can be interventions. But very importantly, above the threshold, labor court. Below the threshold, CCMA. Remember, CCMA is to a very large extent government funded, and people generally don't pay to go to CCMA and things of that.
So what are the practical consequences of the earning threshold?
Well, simply what it means is this: now there's more people that have that added protection because we've increased it now from 241,000 to 254,000. So anybody earning less than 254,000 will get that added protection because they're below the threshold. So every time you increase the threshold means there will be more and more employees that will have the protection than before. That's all it simply means. Yeah.
And it is based on the net salary and not the gross salary. You know, the earning threshold figure, it's the net and not the gross.
No, it is based on the gross minus your PA, your pension fund, and your medical aid. Remember, there might be other benefits as well, which then it does not fall under that. So it's not necessarily under your net, depending on what other benefits that you pay, what other deductions you got. But certainly your gross pay less your taxes and your pension and your medical aid and that kind of thing.
Contributions made by the employer in respect of the employee, are these included also?
No, not. They're not part of the threshold. No, they're not.
Okay, so basically at the end of the day, that those who are earning above the threshold, you know, they do not have the rights of those who are earning below the threshold. And of course, they can negotiate with the employer, those who are above the threshold. But if they have a problem, they can't go to CCMA. They must go to labor court, while those below the threshold, they have access to CCMA. So this is basically what it is all about.
Absolutely. If you're above the threshold, you labor court, below the threshold, you got the protection of CCMA and things. But I must also tell you that to a very large extent, the issue of CCMA is being abused. And employees are having a great difficulty, you know, because every little thing, you know, people are running to CCMA. And it's making it very difficult for businesses to basically survive. And many concerns have been raised of the objectivity of the CCMA at the expense of the employees. But at the same time, you have to have some measures in place. It's a very costly exercise otherwise. But very importantly, you know, what government is attempting to do here is based on the cost of living, the rise of cost of living, the increase in the levels of salary and things, and more people being vulnerable today, that is the purpose of actually increasing the threshold so more people can enjoy this benefit or some level of protection from CCMA. On the issue of those above the threshold, it's not necessarily the case that they are, you know, being prejudiced. It's just that there has to be some balance. And I think the argument is perhaps those that are earning above that might be able to afford some level of, you know, compensation to representation, legal representation and that kind of thing. However, those earning above the threshold can and may continue to negotiate with their employers and enter into certain contracts on issues like if I'm working night shift, will I get transport, you know, to be picked up and dropped off? Would I get a night shift allowance? All those things you are able to negotiate. But the difficulty is this, that if they don't reach agreement, the CCMA, the Department of Labor, can't intervene in that because they are above the threshold. That is basically the difference. Yeah. On the other thing is the issue of temporary employment. In terms of the Act, anybody being employed then more than 3 months on a temporary position is deemed to be permanent. So if you think you're going to have people and give them a three-month contract and then break it after one day or 2 days and do another three-month contract to try and beat the system, you'll run into trouble, because anything more than 3 months, although there's a loophole in there, but it means that you are deemed to be permanent employee.
Okay. Yeah, Jazakallah for your time. Inshallah, next week is Ramadan, and I won't be presenting the Sunday program. There would be Brother Al-Amin Templeton, but I will give him your details so we could go on through Ramadan also.
So, Jazakallah, my
brother. So we, but I would be coming back on after Ramadan.
Inshallah, inshallah.
Okay.
Anyway, let's so, wish you Ramadan Kareem, and I hope you have a very prosperous Ramadan, keeps you in good health, inshallah. And all to all our listeners out there, may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala protect you over this holy month of Ramadan, give you good health, prosperity, inshallah. You know, these days fly, they go very fast. So 30 days is nothing today. But yeah, that's where we are, inshallah. We'll keep in touch.
Okay, Jazakumullah khair. May Allah Azza wa Jalla also guide you to take, you and your family to get maximum benefit of this month. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ameen. Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.